confuse people out there.
Yeah, I did it in a sermon one time. Somebody said, you do biblical apologetics. I said, I don't apologize. I believe the Bible. I'm going to apologize about.
That's whenever I first heard that word, actually, someone said, oh, I was trying to defend scripture, and someone said, oh, apologetics. And I was like, oh, man, I don't like the name of that.
Yeah.
It makes me sound like I got to, you know, I'm apologizing for something.
No, man, I love it.
Semantics.
Anyway, you can call in and join us on the program. We believe the Bible is literally true, scientifically accurate. The Earth's about 6,000 years old. God made it in 6 days, just like he said he did. The evolution theory being taught in our schools has got to be the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And if you believe that, we're here to help, okay? We have the cure.
It's nothing new.
Right.
It's been taught since the beginning of time.
Nothing new at all. Yep. Okay, if you can call in and join us, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or you can instant message us, AOL, instant message.
Dr. Dino Live.
Dr. Dino.
D-I-N-O-L-I-V-E. Just had to do a news article from MSNBC today. Haven't had a chance to read it, though.
Classroom Evolution's Grassroots Defender. Virginia Group, this is MSNBC.com, today. Yep, July 20th. MSNBC.com. Virginia Group sees threat to Darwinist teaching.
Oh, is somebody threatening Darwin?
How unfortunate is that?
Oh, can you believe somebody would
do that? Where do these backwoods people come from? What, do they live under a rock or something? Everybody knows Darwin's true. Let's see, that's the response of the evolutionist.
Uh-huh.
How dare you question this? Of course we know it's true, you know. You got to be behind the times.
If you don't believe it, you better get in line.
That's right. All right. It says, from Washington here, today's Washington Post, a grassroots group troubled by recent Republican triumphs and the influence of the Christian right is fighting back in Northern Virginia by defending the teaching of Darwinian evolution, a battleground in the national cultural war. An email last month seeking support from more than 300 local Democratic campaign volunteers. Isn't it interesting, Jonathan? They go to the Democrats for support for evolution because they all believe they came from a rock, too. Yeah, okay. Seeking support from more than 300 local Democratic campaign volunteers and other potential supporters described efforts across the country to challenge evolution theory. It warned against politically infused theological pseudoscience. Wow. That's in quotes.
And we've got a long name.
Oh, yeah.
Politically infused theological pseudoscience. No longer just pseudoscience.
Politically infused theological pseudoscience.
We're making them mad enough to talk more with bigger words.
Yes. They have a thesaurus. So. There's no question about it. They have a thesaurus. We've got a huge thesaurus. That blue one over there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could use all these big words, too, and confuse everybody. But
I've got right here the Van Nostrand Scientific Encyclopedia.
It's 5 inches thick, isn't it?
We've got two of them right here, actually.
See?
The herniated version.
If we were trying to impress people with big words, but only get the message across to a select few, that's what we would do.
Mm-hmm.
What frustrates the atheists and evolutionists is we deliberately use the small words and make it real plain so
like
that the kids can see it.
Dumb.
Evolution's dumb. Dumb is an easy word, and it is. It's dumb, stupid. Both would explain it equally well.
That's usually about the diet. It's usually one of the first 10 words that American kids learn nowadays, too. So
that's probably true.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll finish this if time permits here. Who's on the phone there, Jonathan?
Let's see.
Push all the buttons over there. Get over there.
We have Eric from Pennsylvania.
Eric from Pennsylvania. Yes, Eric. How can we help you today?
You had mentioned about one cell measuring 40.
Hey, Eric, could you speak up just a little
bit? We're not getting any volume on you here.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, give us a good signal. We'll adjust it from here. Go ahead.
All right. You talked on your tape about one cell would be enough to measure 40 times worth of books in the Grand Canyon. I just wondered how you would measure that.
I believe I've got the reference. My computer's not here, Jonathan. It's over at the other spot. Let me go get to that. Creationscience.com. That's with Dr. Walt Brown, a PhD in physics, Air Force Academy, who has just a very thoroughly researched website that's just incredible.
Well, you can, you know, for something real quick, you can see that, like, for instance, in bioinformatics, the information found in biology can be transcribed out on the paper. That's the whole purpose of the Genome Project, is to get all these different base pairs, the, you know, A, C, T, and Gs, actually written down so they can interpret it on paper. And so it is able, you are able to take, you know, some of this information and put it into matter, you know, material that we can understand, such as paper and pen and pencil.
Okay, Carl Sagan wrote a book called Dragons of Eden. And Carl Sagan, a far cry from a creationist, I think you'd agree with that, he said on page 25, or there's an article in Time Magazine 2003, that the attempt to decode the 3 billion letters of the complete genome was enough to fill 200 phone books at 1,000 pages each. A typical gene may yield as many as 20,500 different kinds of proteins in one gene. Since you have 50 to 100 trillion cells in your body, that would be enough to fill Grand Canyon actually 78 times, according to Walt Brown in the beginning. Dr. Walt Brown, page 62, I believe. Now, that may be the sixth edition. It was on page 62. So don't quote me on the page number that he covers that. But just get the book in the beginning, which is available on his website.
Yep.
Yeah. All right? Either way, regardless if the number's right, the concept is certainly right. There is an incredible amount of information in the human gene code.
Yeah.
And there's just no possible way this is going to arise by chance.
Right.
If somebody wants to believe that, they're welcome to believe it, but it is certainly not science, and it's certainly not common sense.
Yeah.
And it's not something any betting man at Vegas would bet on.
Right.
All right, other questions, Eric?
Any numbers for people who have seen Bigfoot or any kind of dinosaur? Just maybe a few that you may know offhand.
Any phone numbers?
Yeah.
If you watch my video number 3, as I flash through 700 or 800 slides, any information I have is right there on the screen. I mean, the phone number shows up and everything. I say, if you don't believe it, call this person. My slide presentation contains, I think, about 7,000, 6,000 or 7,000 slides. And I try to document everything as thoroughly as possible, including all kinds of information, references on how to get a hold of people or whoever makes a claim. I mean, you may find a few dozen or maybe 100 slides that don't have this, but it's been my desire for at least in the first few years, I wasn't as careful as I should have been in writing down where things were found. And now for the last probably 12 years, I've had to be more careful and add documentation. But anyway, for Bigfoot, I've talked to 10 people now who claim they've seen one face-to-face. I don't know. I've never seen one. Okay. I was spoke at a conference in East Texas, in Conroe, Texas, just a few weeks ago, where some of the leading Bigfoot researchers of America were there on the spot, and they have spent thousands of hours searching for these things and researching these things, and many of them spoke that day when I spoke. I just spoke for 1 hour, but they spoke also and told stories, and you know, they have seen them and stuff like that, so... The guy who was in charge of the conference is Chester Moore, M-O-O-R-E. He wrote a book called Bigfoot Lives, Deal With It. I don't know. I'm going to bring my computer. So if you contact Chester Moore, Jr., he is, he's gone now to Spain for a couple of weeks, but I think Conroe, Texas would be his address or phone number. I mean, if you can contact him through the... Yellow Pages, I guess, but I don't know what to think of Bigfoot. Like I said, I've interviewed a lot of people who've seen one. I don't really have an opinion. I have plenty of theories, but I don't know what to think on it. Okay? Hello, still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right, any other questions?
No, not really. I wanted to recommend a book to you about end time. It's called The Sign by Robert Van Kampen.
Robert Van Kampen?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I have seen some of the stuff by Robert Van Kampen.
Yeah.
I would have to strongly disagree with some of the things I've seen. I mean, he may be a nice guy, he may be right on some things, but
yeah.
Boy, some of the stuff I saw that he believes, if I recall, he is what is considered an old earth creationist. And I would have to be very leery of anything he teaches. I mean, I'll listen, but I'll have to be convinced.
I never knew where he stood about creation. But the book I have is about end times prophecy.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm willing to listen to anybody.
You know, I never really knew what he thought about creation, actually.
Okay.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Well, good. All right. We got any other questions? Give us a call.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Okay, folks. If you want to be on the program, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or instant messages, Dr. Dino Live. I moved my computer now, and I have a little man clicked on Jonathan, so I think we can receive instant messages. Okay. Case summary. Every week or every day, we're going to try to let me finish the one article. Man, the stack gets taller and taller of stuff to cover here. That's the problem, Jonathan, with when you're right on everything, it just is so hard because there's so many other people that believe dumb ideas like we came from a rock. Somebody has to straighten them out. I can't think of a better way to describe it. You know, the Bible says the scoffers would be willingly ignorant. Willingly ignorant. Anybody believes this evolution theory? That just describes. The Bible says God sends them strong delusion. Strong delusion. Romans chapter 1, they did not want to retain God in their knowledge. So God himself sent them the strong delusion. And I'm afraid we've got a few listeners out there, even some of the folks that call in once in a while, that are strongly deluded, and God himself has probably done it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even see how dumb their theory is, and probably can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad.
Well, it's not really, a lot of people might have a misconception about that verse, too. It's not God playing a joke on them and deluding them, and then he gave them up to these things that if they just repeatedly kept turning away from what God's word says, then he's just going to let them go. I mean, that's the way it is.
I know. Okay, let me finish here with MSNBC's article, and we'll get to some of your instant messages here, Dr. Dino Live. It says, an email last month seeking support from more than 300 local Democratic campaign volunteers and other potential supporters described efforts across the country to challenge evolutionary theory. It warned against politically infused theological pseudoscience and said silence risks undermining Virginia schools and weakening the state's economy.
If you don't teach evolution, the state's economy is weakened?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The
wow.
Sky, this is Chicken Little, okay? The sky is falling, okay? You had better teach evolution or we're all going to die.
That's amazing the type of things that you would never dream evolution or the teaching of evolution is connected to, like the economy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, can't you see the connection? I mean, anybody that doesn't believe they came from a rock is not going to work hard and make money.
Well, Eric, you know, your son, he's been a lot of those business meetings and a lot of the seminars about business topics and being good leadership and things like that. He says that actually the philosophy of evolution or survival of the fittest and things like that is actually something that drives a lot of that cutthroat business out there. People just walk all over each other, you know, step
yeah.
on the middleman to get to the top. So
yep.
I guess there is slightly some type of a economical link there.
Yep. Well, so they're going to, the sky is falling. The economy is shot if you don't teach evolution. I can't believe some of the textbooks were covering this. I saw one time this article in the textbook said, you know, if we don't teach evolution, it's going to destroy something like that, the economy again, you know. We're going to be a third-rate nation. It's going to destroy our educational system. They're a bunch of liars, okay? Evolution has nothing to do with the economy or with common sense or with science. They're just a bunch of liars.
We've been a very, you know, fortunate nation even before we taught evolution.
Well, America was founded on Christian principles,
mm-hmm.
and we're still building or living, at least, on this firm foundation laid by our forefathers. I mean, there's a lot of termites in the building now, but it's a great building that was built
mm-hmm.
based on creation. Why didn't other countries, you know, come to the forefront like this?
You look at all those countries that started, look at the Muslim countries. What type of scientific advancements are they making? You look
right.
at the Christian countries who are just booming in intelligence. And
yep.
when you get your foundation set, then the rest is just rocketing from there.
All right. Here we go. This says, the email was first shot from an unlikely group led mostly by Vietnam-era protesters who described their aim as beating Republicans who oppose teaching evolution at their own organizational game. They think that the evolution is threatened because Republicans are organized. Maybe evolution is losing in the public arena because it's a dumb idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder if they consider that.
They're just not open to that one.
No. The only reason they're losing is because they're not organized.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The thought that they might be wrong has never occurred to them. Maybe a thought has never occurred to them on any subject.
Well, think about it. How could you be organized with evolution. I mean, that's just that's not even an organized theory itself. You can go to 10 different scientists, ask them about, you know, evolution, and get 10 pretty different responses.
Right.
I mean, you couldn't even be, it's not our fault they're not organized. They wanted the whole unorganized theory.
Well, it's chaos theory, you know. Sure, deal with it. Here we go. The group says its immediate goal is to Fairfax County School Board endorsement, is a school board endorsement of modern Darwinian theory, which faces attacks in many states by Christian groups and education activists.
Mm.
Education activists.
Ooh, wow.
The sky is falling. Chicken Little. Everybody hurry. Run, run, run. The group's bigger dream is a statewide repudiation of intelligent design. What would the opposite of intelligent design be? Unintelligent?
Unintelligent.
Chaos.
Yeah, chaos.
So their group would be the unintelligent chaos, and we'll be the intelligent design.
We could be intelligent design. They could be unintelligent splats, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The brights.
Yeah, the brights.
The
or what about the ink blot, you know, test or something like that?
Right.
Throw some ink and some paper and squeeze it.
Yeah, the splats. That'd be good. The poofs, okay? Here we go. A movement, let's see. A movement positing that life is too complex to spring from chemistry and biology alone. Followers often asserting that a creator must have guided the origins of Earth and man, believe public schools would better serve students by teaching unresolved aspects of evolution theory. From Minnesota to Pennsylvania to Georgia to Texas, critics of modern Darwinism have battled to change textbooks and classroom approaches. Politicians, scientists, and faith leaders on both sides have joined in the struggle. At hearings in May, the Kansas Board of Education, which has a conservative majority, supported teaching alternatives to evolution, a theory accepted by the vast majority of the scientific establishment. Oh, what a bunch of hooey and pop propaganda here. First of all, 60% of the American population consistently, you know, shows that they believe in creation.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we all paying for a minority view to be taught? Yeah, they should go get their own schools. I think the atheists should go start their own private schools and teach evolution. Anybody dumb enough to pay and come learn it. We'll be back, folks, right after the break.
If you've always wanted to understand a little bit more about law, but not make a deep study of it enough that you would get a degree or be admitted to the bar, but you'd still like to know just a little bit more than you have earlier learned, here's the perfect solution for you. We have received a number of copies of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. This booklet is written by Howard Fisher and Dale Pond. If you'd like a copy, this just under 30 pages will really give you a practical grasp of what the common law is and how it fits into your daily affairs as it relates to courts and jurisprudence. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. No price, just donate to Truth Radio. We'll send it to you. Thanks. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.
Australian Opal. It's made by bugs. Answers with Ken Ham, popular speaker and author from Australia. Well, Ken, I've heard of man-made opal, but how in the world can an insect make opal?
Well, in my homeland of Australia, they've discovered a fascinating small beetle in the rainforests of Queensland. It has greenish scales on its back, and a researcher using a microscope was amazed to find that the internal structure of the scales was the same as that of precious opal. A British scientist declared that this is the first time opal has been found in animals. He said that while forming liquid opal is easy, solid opal is very difficult to make. His team has begun to try to understand how this beetle creates an opal-like structure using what I would call chemical factories inside its cells. Scientists have successfully copied nature in many ways. For example, they've created artificial mother-of-pearl by mimicking abalones. But to mimic the beetle will be much more difficult because this creature probably uses cleverly designed pieces of tiny machinery. This includes molecular motors and templates to extrude what are called nanospheres. These make up the opal layer on its back. This is just another great example of the brilliance of our marvelous Creator God, as well as the fact that there are processes that really can form opal quickly, not over millions of years as we've been indoctrinated to believe.
Ken Ham has much more fascinating information to share with you about the Bible's accuracy from the very first verse. It's found on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
All right, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Jonathan Sampson and Dr. Kent Hovind here, July 20th,
2005.
We're almost done with July.
I never thought we'd make it this far.
Yeah, we did.
If I had known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself. I've taken more vitamins. Something.
You take a bunch of vitamins now.
Yeah, and I'm still in pretty good shape, but still, it's not like it used to be.
Well, there was an article that was written. It was in some newspaper somewhere. Heath and I read it, and these newspaper reporters came here to interview you, and they said Kent Hovind at 51 still has a boyish
51. Yeah. But you got to grow old. You don't have to grow up. I've been fighting the battle of the bulge here for several years, and the bulge is winning just a little bit. Okay.
I can see the battle in sight. I'll be there soon.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, here's an article from BBC News sent to us by, let me get this screen here, BuzzUK234. Says, good evening, guys. You could quickly explain the Lucy discovery and then relate this to this article, news.bbc.co.uk, with a whole bunch of stuff after that. Close attention to the words, I think it is very interesting work, Professor. Chris Stringer, head of Human Origins at the Natural History Museum of London, told the BBC News website, quote, there was controversy as to whether these prints were showing a human pattern, and it looks like they do. Okay, I'm clicked on it here. It took me to BBC News today, showing robotics, article titled, Robotics Show Lucy Walked Upright. Jonathan, do you think they're ever going to get it?
I don't know. It really wouldn't matter if Lucy did walk upright. I mean, monkeys today still do.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that one that suffered brain damage.
Right.
Or, you know, Dane Bramage to some people.
Right.
And walks upright. That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. I mean, and plus, why do they have to go to computers to start proving evolution? Why don't they find something in the real world to do this? I can do anything on my computer I want, pretty much. I mean, I could prove that the sun came from the earth.
Well, did you turn the tricycle into the tiger?
No, that was an animation that was on creationmuseum.com. I believe it was Dr. Carl Ball's website.
Okay.
Just because we see something on a computer, therefore it must be true.
Yep. It had to happen. Here's the article. Australopithecus afarensis. The early human who lived about 3.2 million years ago walked upright, according to an evolutionary robotics model. The model, which uses footprints to predict gait, suggests Lucy, as the first fossil afarensis was called, walked rather like us. This contradicts earlier suggestions that Lucy shuffled like a bipedal walking chimpanzee. Research is published in the Royal Society Interface Journal. Quote, I think it is very interesting work, quote, Professor Chris Stringer, head of Museum Origins at Natural History Museum, told the BBC News. There was controversy as to whether the footprints reported to be from afarensis were showing a human pattern, and it looks like they do. Well?
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. There was, the Bartman just wrote in and talking about this dog. I think we also showed you the video a while back. This dog that was on the news had been born without its two front legs, I believe.
Right.
And it walked upright like humans.
I saw that, yeah.
It kind of hopped around, hopped around.
Uh-huh.
But this dog walked upright as well.
Well, what's the other choice? Drag your nose in the dirt while you, you know, put your
back. Yeah, should we then assume that this dog is also, you know, directly
evolving?
Obviously, yeah.
Yep. Now, the fainting goats, you saw that, right? The Tennessee fainting
goats?
Yeah,
I was reading an article about those, too, you know, why they drop over and stiffen up, too. I can't remember, some chemical imbalance or something like that, but
just go to any Google search and type in Tennessee fainting goats. Now, as soon as they get scared, they stiffen up, okay? Now, what is that evolving into, I wonder?
A rock. It's going backwards.
Going back to a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There we go. How long would that type of creature last in nature?
You run it behind it and find out. Time yourself. You know, from the time you start running, the thing just drops over sideways and locks
first
up.
First time the wolf or the coyote or the mountain lion, you know, wants some supper, just go rock.
I don't know. I think probably a beaver could probably scare one of these things into submission and eat it.
Oh, it's hilarious. If you watch the video clips on those things, I died laughing.
It almost makes you feel kind of, you know, a little bit of sympathy for them. I mean, they're falling over and just, I mean, I can't imagine myself just blacking out, falling over onto the ground.
But they're still conscious. It's just their legs stiffen up.
Yeah, I might bust my head or something.
No. When I mentioned it to Jason, who's from Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
He's over in Africa now on a mission trip. I said, Jason, have you ever heard of the Tennessee fainting goats? He said, well, yeah. He said,
Magazine's Amazing Alan will now attempt to jump through the eye of a needle that is welded to the top of this 55-gallon drum while riding a camel. Are you ready, Alan?
Hey, you got it, guys! Giddy up!
One of those points being that a camel can sense impending danger. Just proved the second point.
This ain't gonna work, guys!
That's right. It's very difficult for a camel to get through the eye of a needle.
Hey, I could have told you that!
And Jesus said it's easier to do that than for a rich man to get into heaven.
Well, with what you guys pay me, I don't have to worry about being rich.
Very few people think they're rich, Alan.
Well, I'm not in a higher tax bracket.
Alan, if what you do have gets in the way of serving God, it's wrong.
Is that why I slam my face into a stack of drums?
Yes.
Oh. It's got to be an easier way to make these points, guys.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.
Thanks for listening to www.truthradio.com. Truthradio.com on the Internet is our central location. You may sometimes find us broadcasting elsewhere through a local station, through a shortwave station, but if you visit www.truthradio.com, you will find us. Visit often and listen all the time. If you go to Google and put in the name Gavin DeBecker, G-A-V-I-N-D-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, you will see that though you probably haven't heard of this man, he's very well known in a lot of circles for his being one of the chief authorities on violence and the reason to fear it. He's written the book Fear Less. Interesting title. Magnificent book. I found a quantity of these, a small quantity, and I'd be glad to share one of these with you for a very little donation to Truth Radio. This book is a secular treatment of the concept of fear, what we should be afraid of, and how we should deal with it. P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444 is the address to use. Donate anything you choose when you ask for Fear Less, a book by Gavin DeBecker.
All right, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour. This is Jonathan Sampson here, July 20th. Just about 5 o'clock right now. We just got done with the first segment here, and I believe the second segment as well. Just had a slight technical difficulty there, threw us off the air for several minutes, so we really apologize about that. No idea what happened, but we're live, we're on, and we're ready to go. We got Dr. Hogan with us here.
All right, sorry about that. Here we are, July 20th. Oh, this is the date they landed on the moon, Jonathan. If we went to the moon, I think we probably did. I did a radio program this morning, and one of the other guests on the program, it was actually in St. Louis by phone, he was involved with NASA for all of the early launches, including the July 20th, you know, today's landing on the moon. Because the question, the announcer came on and said, did we really go to the moon?
Mm-hmm.
He asked me first. And I said, well, I've got the videotape of anything happened on our way to the moon. I've got the one called, was it really a paper moon? Have you seen any of those?
I've seen a funny thing happen on the way to the moon a few times.
Yeah. Did we go to the moon, Jonathan?
When?
July 20th.
I don't know.
1969?
I have no idea. I think we probably did at one point or another. I don't know if we did that time. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of things.
Fishy things. Yeah,
fishy things in that one specific instance right there.
I'll give it a qualified maybe. You don't believe so? Well,
it rang in, but it's not sending it through the internet.
So, according to evolution, this thing ought to turn into a TV program.
Turn into a big net.
And everybody's computer should evolve into a flat screen, you know, 47 inch. Well, 45 minutes left. Do we keep trying, or we just give it up for the day?
I don't know. It's not planning. Didn't you say it's a 5 minute line?
No.
No, it's like 20, 30 seconds. Behind.
Go ahead and call.
Phone, yeah.
Yeah, pick it up and say hi.
Hello, Jonathan. Oh, okay. Right. We're not getting a feed over here. We'll keep working with it. Thank you. Because we're live, they can hear us. I guess.
So we're not getting a feed back to here. Well, all the technical wonders. We're not going to know when we have a break then, are we, Jonathan?
I'm going to try another
connection. He's going to try. Jonathan can fix it. Okay. Apparently, it's some kind of signals going out in there to data heaven. So if you can hear us, welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. There's a technical problem somewhere. Richard is 2.5 hours from the studio and will not be able to get back in time to fix it for today. But somebody called in and said they can hear us. So we're sitting here trying to discuss what on earth is going on. But you can join us. I guess they can't call. They can call, but they have to repeat the question to us, huh, Jonathan? Couldn't really.
Okay, we're on.
We're on. They can go on and call. It's back to normal. It's cured, for at least until we get the signal again that everything blew up again. Well, good. Sorry about the distractions there, folks. If you want to join us, it is July 20th. I know what it is, Jonathan. They went to the moon, and it's the Van Allen belts are upset about everything. The Van Allen belt that they pierced, put a hole in it, and it's now come back to haunt us all these years later. That explains it. Okay, sorry about that. We are getting instant messages here somewhat, and you can join us in that endeavor by getting... Dr. Dino Live, DR, AOL Instant Message, screen name, DRDINOLIVE. Or call us. We'll try to see if that works. 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Jonathan, the little man I click on has now three things up on my screen. I'm going to assume one of them means something here. Here we go. So anyway, Buzz, UK 2434. Sorry about the problem if you're still listening over there in England. Probably going to bed by now. But, thanks for sending us the article about Lucy walking upright. Very interesting. Adam Brow has written to us and says, you often mention symbiosis relationships like the termites and the critters in their intestines as a problem for the evolution fairy tale. While it is a problem, it is never a problem in their eyes. Evolutionists seem to have very vivid imaginations, and they have just so stories to answer every criticism. Would you say that is accurate? Absolutely. What did you say, Jonathan? It's a fog? A fog that fits the landscape.
Yeah, Walter Reminen's book, The Biotic Message, coined that whole idea that it fits the observable data much like a fog fits a landscape.
It doesn't matter what you come up with. Oh, well, that could evolve, you know, given enough time. Time is their god,
mm-hmm.
And they don't see it that way, of course, but it is.
I was listening to a lecture today at the Creation Mega Conference that's going on right now. I'll have to, I guess, mention that later on.
Okay. So you can instant message us or call in. We think everything's going out there into the internet, and you can call and be on the program. We're sorry about the technical difficulties, but we're working on it. What's he say? We are getting a signal?
He was going to talk, but his phone is dying. Make sure your phone has life before you
right.
call in. So.
Charge the battery. Okay.
But anyway, like I was saying, I was listening to a lecture today by Dr. Georgia Perdomo, who is a woman, I think one of the only full-time creation speaker women out there. She's got her degree in molecular biology and genetics, and she was saying how a lot of the criticisms today, the evolution is saying, oh, well, this function is overly complex. therefore evolution must have happened. Or they'll say, oh, it's too simple, evolution must have happened. So it doesn't matter which way you go.
It doesn't matter, right. Yeah. Either it evolved slowly or it evolved quickly. If you're from Harvard, either one seems to work.
Well, we've got okay. Eric on the phone right now.
Eric, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I heard you insulting evolution again, so I decided to call in.
Wait, you heard me? Insulting evolution?
That must mean that you tuned in.
You tuned in. Thank you for joining us, Eric. It's always a joy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about what I brought up yesterday with the planets. Is that a break?
I don't know. We can't hear.
I don't know. I'm also hearing music, but that could just be my phone.
Well, we're not hearing much of Truth Radio. Some kind of technical difficulty here. It's about time for a break, Jonathan.
Yeah.
It is break. Hang on, Eric. We'll be back in 1 minute, folks.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418. That's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help. Truth Radio, 800-311-2418.
When life throws you a curve.
Bottom of the third, here's the 2-2 fastball. It's deep to center.
It's a home run. Here's Rise Above with Rob Rosenbaum.
Friends, I'm touched by the passion of Peter's love for Jesus. The night the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, Peter lost it. He saw his dear friend being chained, and instead of backing down, Peter drew his sword and cut off a soldier's ear. Our schools are filled with young people constantly being chained and ridiculed, yet it seems as though few are there to protect them. Now, I'm not advising that you fight like Peter because Jesus told him to put away his sword. What I am saying is be there for them. Jesus didn't need Peter's help, but we do. Rise Above and stand up for each other.
Rise Above with Rob Rosenbaum is a production of Rise Ministries at RiseMinistries.com and is made possible by Northwestern College, a distinctly Christian liberal arts college in Orange City, Iowa. Visit nwciowa.edu.
All right, folks, welcome back. We believe we are live, and the problem is still a mystery. It's one of those ghosts in the system.
It just sustained.
Sustained. Yeah. Anyway, this is July 20th, 2005, and once again, this is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson in Pensacola, Florida. And we believe the evolution theory is the dumbest and most...
dumb, right?
Don't interrupt now. I mean...
I believe we're up, yeah. It's the dumbest idea in the history of the world. And Eric is calling in. Go ahead, Eric, and you were saying something about the planets.
Yeah, you kind of ended there... Last program was saying that there's no evidence or proof that other planets exist in the universe.
I'd have to define what you mean by proof, but as far as people have observed stars wobbling, but it is not possible to see a planet that far away.
I just want to jump in real quick, Eric. You're the one that made the claim that there is no reason not to have trillions and trillions of planets out there.
Uh-huh.
So I just want to get that on record here. You said that there should be trillions and trillions of planets out there.
Well, sure, it doesn't make any sense not to believe that.
That's fine. There should be trillions and trillions of bananas out there, too, in space. I mean,
right.
So
and Romulans and everybody else, too. Go ahead.
Well, now you're just being idiotic. I mean, it's logical to think that there are many, many planets out there, since not only we see the trillions of stars, but... I mean, our own solar system is 9.
Okay. Well, if we see 9 or 10 or 10, 15, say we even find 20 planets.
No, well, you're talking about directly seeing, and that's, you already stated, isn't possible. I mean, why do you insist on?
No, I'm saying if we even are able to see or measure 20 planets, then how is it logical to conclude that there must be trillions out there?
I guess there's trillions of stars from orbit around.
And so for every star, there's a planet?
Well, see, Eric, this goes back to your fundamental idea of how the solar system formed. And so, yes, it is logical from your perspective to believe these other stars have planets also.
Well, if God, let's take it from your perspective. If God created more than one planet, then why wouldn't, you know, why would he not fill the whole universe with planets then?
Well, I guess from a theological perspective or a biblical perspective, if Christ died once for all, for God so loved the world, Eve is the mother of all living, there are numerous scriptures that would seem to indicate this is it. We know there are eight other planets that we can see very clearly, and we know for sure there's no life on any of those. We know there are nearly 100 moons in our solar system. Earth only has one, but we know there's no life on those. And now you want to say that there, because there are stars, therefore there are planets and or moons around them.
Oh, it makes perfect logical sense to believe that, or to logically think that.
Can I ask one question? What does it matter if there were?
What do you mean?
Why are we even arguing about how many planets there are? What does it matter if there are 100 planets out there if there's just 9?
Well, it's just more of a chance for life to evolve. If they have trillions and trillions and trillions.
Just because you have
a planet
out there doesn't mean life is going to evolve on that planet.
Well, yes, but...
What conditions does it take for life to evolve?
I don't know.
Well, then, you just said if you have more planets, then you have better conditions for life to evolve, better chances. But now you're saying you don't even know the conditions for life to evolve. So you're contradicting yourself here.
Well,
if you know, then tell us. If you don't, then don't tell us you do.
I don't know the specific...
But you know it could happen if there's more planets.
But not only that, he knows
there's more chance for life to evolve if there's more planets for them to evolve on.
Well, also, I bet you know that it happened here, don't you?
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
This all goes back to the preconceived worldview. It's called the paradigm that you have. You like this evolution theory because the only alternative is there's a creation, which means a creator, which might mean some rules.
No, that's not true, Ken. I just don't believe in a God. I believe that is the definition of a fairy tale, you know, with magic, and he just waves his hand and all the stuff appeared, you know. That goes against what common sense says.
Well,
since you're so big into common sense.
Yeah, well, your paradigm of all these trillions and trillions of stars came from a little dot.
Which came from nowhere.
Oh, no. I mean, we hardly know anything about the origin of the universe. I mean...
Oh, come on.
I don't even have to defend anything. I could just say, we don't know.
You can go out and get this month's Astronomy and Space magazine and look at it. Don't tell me we hardly know anything about the origin of the universe because these are not the claims they're making.
Oh, okay. They're
if you believe
claims,
the Big Bang theory.
Oh,
hold on. If you believe the Big Bang theory, which is, I guess, your whole base for saying there must be trillions of planets out there, by you're basing your whole paradigm off of secular cosmology, then yes, they do say it came from a dot.
No, Jonathan, it just makes sense to believe that there is trillions of planets because there are trillions and trillions of stars. It just makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't it?
Well, okay, let's suppose there are trillions of planets.
I still don't see the point, even if there were. It doesn't matter.
Okay, if you look at, there are so many factors that would prohibit life from even existing. 99.99999% of our own solar system, it is impossible for life to exist. There's a very narrow band of very precise parameters that have to be met in order for life to even live, okay?
I mean, before you want to speculate...
Well, our life.
Here we go, Eric. Before you even want to speculate about the possibility of life arising on some other planet, you still, and don't forget this, you still have to show how it happened on our planet.
Here you can study it up close and personal.
You're in it.
And we still can't prove how it happened here.
We can't really prove it because people like you want visual evidence of it actually evolving over the long periods of time it takes. But
there you go. See, now there you just appeal to your religion. We don't see it happening.
I think you have a vague concept of the actual definition of religion, Ken. I mean,
I think you have a vague...
What does time have to do with religion?
You just appeal to time. You said over long periods of time. You're the one that appeals to time.
Okay.
I'm pointing out that at that moment, as soon as you appeal to time, we don't see it happening in the present. We don't have a theory how it can happen, but given enough time, it must have happened. That is where you become a religious person.
No. I have evidence to back up my statements. I mean, you see fossils in the ground, and you see all kinds of things that you can back this up logically. It's not a religion when you're not really believing in the supernatural force. And time is not supernatural. It doesn't create anything.
Well, time actually degrades everything, and yet you somehow believe that it's going to improve things and go from a rock to a human, or a cell to a philosopher. And the observations would show us, the scientific observation says, the longer you wait, the more things fall apart. So you're even your belief is contrary to common sense.
What do you mean? If you just let it sit there and rot, yeah, that's going to happen. But
nothing improves.
Things.
What's that?
What? You don't see any beneficial mutations that go on?
But even that mutation requires an animal that's alive, absorbing an enormous amount of energy from its environment.
Uh-huh.
The entire environment would be degrading. The sun would be burning out. All of energy is being used up in order to get this little minor improvement that you imagine. And even those aren't observed. We don't observe any mutations that are beneficial.
What about that 8-foot Ukrainian guy, and he's still growing it? Wouldn't you consider maybe being tall beneficial?
He doesn't think so. He thinks he's cursed. He can't fit into any house, can't go in a car, can't ride a bus.
Terrible knee problem.
In medieval times, you probably would be able, you would have some advantages being that tall.
Then again, you have to find someone to mate with. There's going to be some certain anatomical problems there, I think.
And, are the offspring going to kill the wife, you know?
What?
I didn't catch
what you just said, Ken.
Pardon me?
Repeat what you just said.
Well, suppose this 8-foot-7-inch guy finds somebody to marry.
Uh-huh.
Actually, what he has, he had a surgery on his brain when he was 12, and it apparently damaged the pituitary, and it's pituitary giantism, and it's a well-known phenomenon, and, it's not something genetic. But suppose it was genetic. Suppose the guy really was 8-foot-7, and suppose he finds some girl 5-foot-5 who says, yes, I'll marry you. And suppose he's going to produce giant children. Well, then you got the extremely high probability that the children will be too large to be born and she will die.
Not always. I mean, just because you're large at one point in your life doesn't mean you have to, start off as a 50-pound baby. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, hamsters are born smaller than humans, okay? And if man is gigantic, first place, this is not a genetic thing with this guy. It's a pituitary. It's a known malfunction of the pituitary gland causing this. So it's not. But no, it's not beneficial. He doesn't think so. He's going to have all kinds of knee problems and ankle problems, as most of these giants do.
He had frostbite on his feet. He had to quit his job because he couldn't find shoes big enough to cover his feet.
Size 40 or whatever it is. So, but again, this mutation, or it's not even a mutation, but if it was a mutation that made him gigantic, what would that prove? That still, the entire universe
It proved that things improve over time and you get more complex things.
Tell us why a bigger guy is an improvement.
Well, you get to carry more stuff, kill more things. I don't know.
A guy with bigger arms, a stronger guy.
Huh?
You're talking about, a guy with stronger arms can carry more things.
Well, now he's got to eat more food, too, to survive. So this is probably maybe a disadvantage. He requires more,
He can also kill more, too.
How can he kill more?
Well, you can take out larger animals if you're bigger and
stronger. A midget with a grenade could take out a herd. I mean, just because you're bigger, you may be even more lethargic.
Did they have grenades back then, Jonathan?
Huh?
Did they have grenades back then?
We don't know.
I don't know. I mean, just because you're bigger.
Just like you don't know about the moon landing either, do you?
Hold on. Just because you're bigger, that could also mean that you may be even slower. Therefore, you're prone to be attacked and killed by or mauled by a bear,
right?
Just because you're bigger.
Who was that little 5'6" basketball player that was so famous years?
Penny, I believe. Penny Hardaway.
I don't know about that one. He was fast as lightning and could get in and out among them big guys and make all the baskets. Anyway, so Eric, that's not what you called about today, is it? Did you have another point, or was that it?
I kind of forgot where I was going with this, but really talking about how time isn't make evolution religion, and I don't even know how I really can form such an argument.
Well, I think you've proven our point over and over every time you call in.
Oh, not really. I never prove anything you say.
Okay, there are numerous things that you believe. Like you say, it's true we see lots of stars, and then you believe that there must be lots of planets.
Why do you keep shoving this down my throat about believing? I mean, you believe all kinds of things in a normal daytime, but that doesn't mean it's religion, and then you can just claim it as one.
Well, we're trying to get you to see the difference. See, I don't think you have a good understanding of what science is.
Sure I do.
Science is things we can observe and study and test and demonstrate. That does not include evolution.
Why not?
Because you don't observe anything about it.
You can observe animals in the wild evolving. You agree that microevolution exists. Why can't you demonstrate and observe that?
I agree that variations within the kinds happen, which is predictable by the creation model.
You can take a jar of jelly beans that are all different colors, shake it up, and you can get some amazing variations of the orders that the jelly beans are in. But you're never going to get a tic-tac. You're never going to get a tic-tac to pop up in here, even amongst all these variations.
What?
If I give you a handful of M&Ms, you know, how many different patterns or how many different lines or variations could you make with those M&Ms?
Hundreds, millions, infinite probably.
You could do tons and tons of variations with the M&Ms I've given you, but those variations will never lead you to get something other than an M&M.
You're not going to get a tic-tac.
It doesn't matter if you're seeing variations in there. That's irrelevant. I mean, you've got, have you ever seen those things we sell, like little elastic balls? We sell them in the bookstore. They get real big and you can shrink them back down.
The Hoberman sphere.
The size is so variable.
Yeah.
It can be so big or so small. And just because it has all these different variations.
Like Neanderthal, then. I mean,
the Neanderthal are people, normal humans. They buried their dead. They obviously had religion. They believed in an afterlife. They put things with the dead when they buried them, flowers and things like that.
But what about biologically? How close were they DNA-wise?
They were 100% human, probably humans who were living to be 300 or 400 years old.
Really?
Jack Cuozzo, his website is drjackcuozzo.com, C-U-O-Z-Z-O, has been an orthodontic surgeon for 32 years, studying the growth of the human face bones. And he is probably one of the world's experts on the Neanderthal.
And he, unlike most evolutionists who talk about this, has actually been there and observed the fossils in person.
He went to Europe with an X-ray machine and X-rayed the actual Neanderthals. And said, look, these are humans with diseases. You should read his book, Buried Alive.
Actually, here's a very interesting thing. He had a debate with an anthropologist. His name was Dr. Mann. And Dr. Mann, they're currently in some type of legal struggle because Dr. Mann does not want anybody to see the video of the debate. Now, why would that be? Why would an anthropologist not want anybody to see this video of a debate between him and a creation?
Oh, because they're all liars, right?
No, I'm just asking you, why would the guy not want the debate to get out?
I don't know. I would have no clue.
Maybe I can tell you why. First of all, because...
No, you can't tell me
of course
why.
I can. I'll tell you right now.
You can
the guy wrote an article a long time ago about the Neanderthal, saying that many of their diseases or many of their characteristics were caused by diseases. He also talked about the prematuring children today, why they get so old or mature so much sooner. When Dr. Cuozzo brought up the subject, the guy disagreed with him, when in fact Dr. Cuozzo was arguing from the same position the guy did several years before. And when Dr. Cuozzo showed his quote agreeing with Dr. Cuozzo, the guy buffooned down and cowered under his little desk there and didn't want to talk about it anymore. The whole thing is an embarrassment because the guy does not have any order to his theory, even though he's a professional anthropologist. That's why he does not want anybody to see this, because it embarrasses the evolutionist.
Well, anyway, Eric, what evidence...
100% Neanderthals, 100% human?
Neanderthal was 100% human, probably humans living past 300. And the Bible teaches that right after the flood, there was a time period when people still lived to be 400 years old. There certainly are many of these legends from ancient cultures, like the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Greeks, the Chinese even. They all have a legend called the Golden Age, when people used to live to be 1,000. Well, the Bible says they got over 900. Nobody got it to 1,000. But certainly the biblical view would be verified by all the anecdotal evidence from ancient cultures and from the Neanderthals. The brow ridge over your eye never stops growing. The more you chew, the more chewing action you have to go through in life, the more it pulls on these muscles, because the eyebrows actually support part of the muscles for chewing. And so any bodybuilder will tell you the more you build your muscles, the bigger the bones get also. And so a larger eyebrow ridge and larger occipital bun is evidence of somebody living a long time pulling on these bones. You need to get the book Buried Alive.
Or you can get the seminar he gave at the Creation Boot Camp.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, see, if you'd have come to Creation Boot Camp, you'd already be converted.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't be having all these questions. And life is so much more wonderful when you actually know the Creator personally. It's great.
Kent, I spent some of my life being a creationist, and I don't think one exists.
Well, it's like the prodigal.
I don't have any evidence of that.
It's like the prodigal son. The father will be glad to take you back when you decide to come, if you live long enough.
Well, you tell him to contact me, Kent.
Okay.
Glad to talk to him next time.
All right. Hey, it's break time. Thanks for calling. All right. I'll begin tomorrow.
Yep.
We'll be back in just a minute, folks. Hang in there.
Something in my hand I think you should own, and I'm not going to try to tell you that you don't already have it, but you, I am confident, do not have it all in one piece like you would if you owned a copy of the Citizen's Rule Book. Do you have a copy? Well, this is in your shirt pocket, full force research at your fingertips, having to do with how to behave as a juror, the Constitution itself, the resources in here are just tremendous. And I'll be glad to send you a copy of this if you'll send me enough for postage plus a dollar. Whatever you want to contribute to Truth Radio, I'll send you a copy of the Citizen's Rule Book. Just get back to me at Post Office Box 344. Nipomo, California, 93444, and it will be coming your way.
Hi, I'm Lee Strobel, author of The Case for a Creator. As you know, evolution and naturalism are taught in public schools as scientific truth. But in my book, The Case for a Creator, I reveal the evidence from science that clearly indicates God is the architect of the universe and the author of life. I've explored 6 different scientific disciplines and asked key experts for the latest data. Wherever I look, the evidence points straight toward God as our creator. Consider the evidence from biology. The 6 feet of DNA coiled inside every one of our body's 100 trillion cells contains a 4-letter chemical alphabet. This alphabet spells out the precise assembly instructions for all the proteins from which our bodies are made. Cambridge-educated Stephen Meyer demonstrated that no hypothesis has come close to explaining how this information got into biological matter by naturalistic means. On the contrary, whenever we find a sequential arrangement that's complex and corresponds to an independent pattern or function, Meyer said this kind of information is always the product of intelligence. Meyer added that books, computer codes, and DNA all have these 2 properties. He said, we know books and computer codes are designed by intelligence, and the presence of this type of information in DNA also implies an intelligent source. Based on the evidence, Meyer has concluded that we can infer the existence of a mind that's far greater than our own, a conscious, purposeful, rational, intelligent designer who's amazingly creative. As you can see, there's plenty of new scientific evidence that affirms the universe was created by God. This alone is reason to celebrate, but we must continue to build and share this new knowledge. Read The Case for a Creator or visit caseforacreator.com and prepare yourself for vigorous discussions about intelligent design. And if you think this evidence from biology was compelling, you should hear the evidence from human consciousness.
All right, folks, welcome back to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. We are so sorry about the technical problems earlier. Everything appears to be working now. So if you have any problems getting hold of us, we apologize. We hope to get a hold of Richard and get things worked out for tomorrow. Anyway, you can join us here this July 20th, 2005, anniversary of the moon landing, if we really went. And I think we probably did. I don't know, but it's always good to be skeptical. You know,
it looked like on camera that we did.
Yeah. Now, see, Michael Shermer with the Skeptics magazine is right about being skeptical about many things. Why aren't they skeptical of evolution, though?
That's the most convenient for their side.
They're skeptical about lots of things. which is good. And I told him that. I said, what you do is good, but you haven't turned the glasses on yourself. You know, get your own theory under your own skepticism and look at it. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you be skeptical if I told you we came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago and you're related to a palm tree? You know, wouldn't an average person with normal intelligence be a little skeptical of that? Say, hello, you know, this maybe doesn't make any sense. Okay. Anyway, join us on the program. There's still time to call in, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or 877-479-DINO, that's 3466 for you alphabetically challenged folks. Then go to extension 136 and you'll be live, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. I got a whole bunch of those, Jonathan. I got to get back to some of these instant messages. Here we go. Too many. Let me move my little mouse down here. Okay. There. You keep sending them over. Symbiosis relationships. I did that one. Adam Brow. Okay. CH Soldier 3001 says, I know you don't type fast, but I can't seem to connect the, to the URL.
You already did Adam Brow?
Yeah, he asked about Adam Brow asked about Just So Stories about the termites and the a symbiosis relationship. Somebody needs to do a whole book just on symbiosis. That'd be a good either at least an article, but certainly you could do a whole series of books on just symbiosis relationships and the impossibility of them evolving. Well, you kind of have a start with that with Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution.
Well, some of them, I mean, they will give examples of some symbiotic relationships that have. I guess in their opinion, evolves kind of like how we depend on vitamin C, and vitamin C plants and trees kind of depend on us for propagation. So they try to give some examples like that. But there are some very extreme symbiotic relationships.
Okay, wait, like the one about the bass that lays its eggs in, or the clam that lays its eggs in the bass's gills. Unbelievable! You got to get the video series, "The Incredible Creatures That Defy Evolution," by Job Martin. It's phenomenal. He shows pictures in there of a little clam that lives in freshwater streams. The clam, the only way the eggs can grow and develop and hatch is if they're in the gills of a bass.
Shows a movie of it.
Yeah, a movie of it. Well, how does the clam lay his eggs in the gills of a fish?
And it happens like in a split second. Too. The clam is like a small little minnow. And
so the clam has this little muscle part of his body that he sticks out of his shell and wiggles it, and it looks like a little minnow.
Mm-hmm.
The bass comes up to grab this thing, and at that instant, the clam shoots its eggs into the fish's mouth.
Right when the bass opens his mouth, yeah.
Now, how does the clam know that the fish is about to bite it? I mean, where are his eyes? How does he know? How do it know?
Well, speaking of Incredible Creatures, we have a Grant on the phone who is apparently familiar with the video series as well.
Okay, yes, Grant, go ahead.
Okay, I haven't seen the video series yet. There's a parrot, one of the animals on there.
Now, can you speak up just a little bit, Grant?
We're not getting a good feed from
you.
Go ahead.
There's a parrot, one of the animals on the video.
A parrot?
Parrot.
Spell that, I don't understand what you're saying.
P-A-R-R-O-T.
Oh, parrot.
Colorful birds that talk.
Yeah, I don't know. Was a parrot on the video, Incredible Creatures?
They have, I don't think parrots are, but they do have a lot of birds on there.
Anyway, what's your question, Grant?
I think the parrot is a pretty interesting subject. It stands out in the animal world as having the ability to talk. Now, my question is, what evolutionary advantage does that give it? It can't use that ability to communicate. It can only mimic sounds and ears. I mean...
Oh, there's an Australian bird that blows the parrot out of the water. I don't know if you've ever seen this one, Dr. Hoven, but this bird, I guess they've recorded it simulating over 200 different sounds from chainsaws to people. I mean, this bird will make just completely identical chainsaw sounds.
I've never heard
it. This bird in Australia, I can't remember what its name was, though. If someone out there is listening, they know what it is. It is just amazing. It was on Discovery Channel once. Blows parrots away.
So why would such an ability evolve? What good is it?
I guess it could be used like a defense type thing. If it can mimic a bear or something like that, and a little possum's coming over there near it. Or a chainsaw. Possum wouldn't want to be near.
That's
a chainsaw.
True. Yeah. I don't want to be near a chainsaw. I got a scar on my leg right now from the last time. Okay.
Or I could do stand up.
Stand up comedy. A parrot.
Yeah.
That'd be good. We got to get one of those birds here for our museum. That'd be cool.
They're like $600 or something, though, aren't they?
Ooh, somebody else needs to get it donated to the museum.
We got the peacocks.
Well, we have a peacock and a peahen. Anyway, yes, sir, Grant. Interesting. So you think the parrot? Phrase your question for me again there.
I was just wondering how the evolution would explain the parrot's ability to talk. I mean, it serves no purpose whatsoever, and by definition, evolution only evolves things that are beneficial immediately.
Well, maybe we can get an evolutionist out there to take up the challenge. How did the parrot evolve this ability to mimic sounds? And remember them for really long times, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing. Y'all talk about landing on the moon?
Yes, sir.
I believe we did land on the moon, and I guess my strong support for that would be this.
You're going to speak up again. We can barely hear you here.
Okay. My strongest support for landing on the moon would be this. At the time, I believe NASA was, the scientists there predominantly believed in evolution. And they predicted that the duck would be several miles thick. Well, if you're going to write a science fiction, you use the theories that are prominent at that time. When they landed on the moon, there was only a few inches of duck.
Only a half inch.
They fabricated the whole thing. I don't see why they would fabricate to meet their theories.
You got a good point there. Yeah, the dust was only like a half inch thick. And they did. I mean, Carl Sagan and many others, you know, prophesied or predicted huge layers of dust on the moon. I quote that on my video number one. But good point, Grant. All right.
Okay.
All right, Grant. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
All right. If any of you evolutionists out there got any way to explain how the parrot evolved the ability to talk, or at least to mimic sounds, that would be interesting. And why? Why would they need this unusual ability to mimic sounds? Okay, anyway, CH Soldier 301 says, I know you don't type fast, but I can't seem to connect to the URL, so if you could respond by typing, that'd be great.
We can't do it.
We can't do it.
No, I'm sorry.
Can I type on this microphone if I...
Is it Morse code over the
Morse? I know Morse code. I learned that in Boy Scout. I'd have to review a few of the letters. I used to do pretty good at it.
There was a dot in one of them.
They all have dots and dashes, yeah. Yeah.
Well, then I know most of them.
Yeah. I even had a work toward a ham license, where you have to send and receive 7 words a minute, you know, and I could send like 15 or 16. I could pretty fast, but...
A ham license?
They call it ham radio, for, you know, in the old days. It's probably before your time, Jonathan.
Can ham know that?
Ken Ham, I don't know if he knows it or not, probably.
Does he have a ham license?
Probably says ham on his driver's license. I built my own radio transmitter and receiver mm-hmm. when I was like 14 years old. My dad was an electrical engineer and mm-hmm. got me a kit, you know. I forget what the name of the kit was. But anyway, I built a radio and put up a big tower in the backyard and used to, you know, listen to stations all over the world via ham radio. So, all right, who cares? But I did learn Morse code. I'd have to review some. I bet right now, I probably haven't touched it in 25 years. I could probably go through and get 23 of the letters. I could get them all, I think.
I could probably convince someone I probably can't convince you, but I could probably convince someone else that I know Morse code.
But dot dash is A, dash dot 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 is B, dash dot is C. Yeah, I could go through and do most of them. Okay. Okay, here we go. And Kent, by the way, is dash dot dash dot dash dot dash. Alternate all the way through, K-E-N-T.
Hmm.
Who cares? Okay. Anyway, CH Soldier 3001 says you can't type, can't connect to the URL to respond by typing. I can't do that right now. Otherwise, I can send a question via email. My question is about the number of chromosome chart, particularly the plants. Plants, in my opinion, don't appear to be all that much more complex than humans. Far less, as far as I can tell. Why then does a fern need nearly 10 times the number of chromosomes than humans? Is it because increasing the number of chromosomes doesn't increase the complexity, or are they more complex, or perhaps to make them a better food source, more protein? Why do ferns have 10 times the chromosome number that humans do? Good question. I don't know. I mean, if you look at it from a microscopic level, anything living is unbelievably complex. So I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe somebody out there can tell us. Why do ferns have 480 chromosomes and humans have 46?
The important thing that I need to be keeping in mind is that it's not the chromosome itself. It's what, you know, makes up the chromosome that really defines what the fern is.
Right.
So.
Okay. Oh, good. I can't answer that. Sorry about that. Here we go. Bill Help 1 says, hi, Brother Hovind. Have you heard of Lee Strobel's book, A Case for a Creator, and what do you think of it? Yes, Bill, Lee Strobel advertises on this program. You'll hear his ads coming up almost every day. He is a very nice guy from what I've seen. I've seen him on TV. I've never met him that I know of. I've got some of his books here in our library. I haven't read a lot of his stuff. I do know that he is what's called an old earth creationist.
Yep, or progressive creationist, old earth creationist, yeah.
He would fit in well with guys like Hugh Ross and Gerald Schroeder and Don Stoner, and they believe the earth is billions of years old, and they do believe in creation, but they do not have a consistent story that's certainly not consistent with the Bible. Okay, so I just always, I would be cautious, you know, I'd be glad to read anything or be glad to talk to him any time. But I think we could probably agree on things. We'd have to strongly disagree on a couple other things. Okay, who's on the phone there, John?
We've got Mike from Anchorage.
Anchorage, I'm coming up to Anchorage in September, Mike.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Dr. Hovind.
Well, good. How can we help you, Mike?
Well, I tried to instant message you on Friday, and then you tried to read it, like, on Monday, and then you kept getting bumped back, and my internet wasn't working earlier today, so I figured I'd just try calling in to the show.
We just have a few minutes, so hopefully we'll get it done today.
Okay, I'll make it quick. I instant message about the religion of Scientology and just was wondering if you had any insight on that at all.
Yes.
Just curious as to how wacko they really are and how they can really believe those things. I'm not even really sure what they believe, to be honest, but I know it's not science and I know it's not religion.
It is strange. I think you'd find a wide variety of people in the Scientology movement, but as a general rule, I think they would teach that nothing really exists, if I recall, from studying that religion. Everything's in the imagination. So you're not really sick, you just think you're sick.
Uh-huh.
This is, if I recall, this is off the top of my head, started by Mary Baker Edison Frances Patty Glover. You know, she got married like 6 times. Had a whole bunch of last names. She always kept the name and added a new one when she got married again.
Glover.
Mary Glover, Patterson, Patterson, Eddie. Huge name. I've got some of her books here in the library. This was probably 80 years ago, 100 years ago. Call in tomorrow. We'll be live and hopefully no technical problems. But Mike,
sure. I got more questions. I'll call in tomorrow. Thanks.
Oh, thanks a lot, Mike. All right. All right.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California 93444.
What's with all this commotion? I haven't been able to sleep all night.
This is a very special night.
Yeah, well, I'm hungry. Is that kid going to be in the manger long?
That's not just any kid. That's the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
Are you pulling my tail?
Hey, he's the King of Kings.
A king would be born in a palace, not in my manger. I'm hungry.
You're always thinking about food.
I'm a cow. It's what I do.
Well, you keep eating like that all the time and you'll be a steak. You should show more reverence for this child.
What are you thinking? People are going to worship this kid? Like songs are going to be sung about him? Or the best-selling book in history will be written about him? And what? Thousands of years from now, people's lives will be changed because of this baby? You think people are going to base their whole calendar system on this baby's birth right here in our stable tonight?
It could happen.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY.
at lifelinepro.com.